Welcome to The Thriving Marriage, the podcast for those who want to get their spouse back in love with them and truly thrive.
You'll learn why 95% of people don't save their marriage and the secret method no one else is talking about that will change everything for you. Are you ready?
Are you ready?
Let's turn tragedy to triumph.
Here are your hosts, international marriage experts, Mark Johnston and Heather Choate.
Hello, everyone. My name is Mark Johnston. Welcome to the Thriving Marriage Podcast. You may notice I do not have anyone with me this week. Heather was feeling ill. My wife, who sometimes joins me, is busy with some other things. So I thought I'd just talk to you all myself for a little bit today. So this week's topic is the three steps to influence your spouse to come back. These are three things that I think that are necessary to really start the process to get you going on things. And you might need to ask yourself, okay, do I have these three things present in my relationship? Especially if you are feeling a bit stuck in the process of repairing your marriage. So I know a lot of you are feeling stuck there. And so I wanted to give you some points and main steps. Before we get into that, though, we are going to discuss our client win of the week. This, is shared with permission by Nicole. Nicole says she had a big win. Memorial Day weekend, her husband told her that he was done and would not, that Nicole wouldn't or couldn't change anything. She says that through trust in God's will and word and help from the coaches here at High Thrive Coaching, she said that they spent New Year's Eve together. He asked her out. They went with friends. They had a good time, and he paid attention to her throughout the evening, which is new, and laughed with her, which is new. She says that they still have lots of work on going on, and there's other things still lingering, but it's a win. So there are lots of little victories here, things that demonstrate that these principles work. There are, of course, obstacles still to get to overcome in many circumstances, but it's always nice to hear about progress and victories. So into the discussion of what kind of things are needed, what needs to be in place to make sure that you have an ability to influence your spouse. So when I look at this sort of problem, I see a few main obstacles that get in the way. Mainly, a lot of times there's the partner, the person leaving, they feel stuck themselves. They feel that there might be a lot of anger or tension. They might feel a lot of just really heavy negative feelings getting in the way, or they might have a huge amount of lack of trust. They might say, I can't trust in these changes. I don't trust that things can be better. Or it's just gotten to a point where there's really no pleasantness left. There's no feelings there's no friendliness left. And so this is where I'm talking about three things that are needed. Is I think there needs to be a chance to reset emotions. I think there needs to be a step of rebuilding some comfort and trust. And I think there needs to be a step of building up friendship before you even start to talk about coming back together. So let's go over these, and I'm going to give some examples, have a bit of a discussion with this. Now, I'm looking at this. And I'm trying to see why I can't actually see any of the comments. For some reason, something's going on with the streaming program, and I won't be able to see any of your comments. I would have loved to have commented on some of your things. So if you're trying to talk to me and I'm not responding, that's probably why. But let's start with that first one. The first step is I feel that there needs to be a reset of some sort. This is why in some ways, when you get into some of our programs, we have some steps, like there's an apology letter, and we have some discussions about trying to figure out what the concerns are. I would say that a lot of other experts try to tackle this problem with a very specific solution. You might hear a lot of other relationship experts discuss a period of no contact to start this process off. Oftentimes that period is 30 days. Some will even tell you that this is a universal rule, that you absolutely need 30 days of no contact when your partner or your ex back. Almost like this amount of days is like some magical number. And I do think that this is slightly misleading. But I want to explain why something like this is out there, why a solution like that exists, the purpose of the 30 days of no contact. And this is why I don't always recommend it, though sometimes I do. So 30 days of no contact, it allows for a reset. It allows people to calm down and to stop reacting emotionally oftentimes. When your marriage is coming apart, it can be an emotional time for both of you, for the partner that's leaving and the partner that is being left. And you want to be able to approach problems with some confidence without being swept up by anger and sadness and desperation. So 30 days of no contact it gives some space for that. It allows people to calm down. Now, my wife Jennifer and I, we tend to prefer to address arguments and problems right away. We don't like to sit on them. And I know that's maybe difficult for some of you. At the same time, I know that there are some times when I need a little bit of time before I'm ready to talk to my wife to solve things. And I'm just, you know, me being the type of person that doesn't like to sit on things a whole long time, I can imagine that some of your partners and your husbands or wives out there might need extra time before they themselves can calm down. Now, I don't like this this as a solution in general, because just having 30 days of no contact doesn't actually fix anything. The only real purpose is that it allows people to cool off, because you just simply can't physically maintain a high state of emotions for a super long time. Another thing that it provides is it allows a contrast. You're able to show a difference between your interactions then versus now. You're able to demonstrate a new you. And it gives you an opportunity yourself to find acceptance in your current state. If your partner is saying, I'm leaving, and your reaction to that is there's this huge amount of dread and sadness and desperation, that desperation, all of that, it can often kill attempts at repair. And a lot of what I think needs to happen in a period of no contact like that is it is to work on having some acceptance, which can help you appear confident. Confidence being a state of being okay with who you are, where you are at. But yeah, if you have those 30 days and you work on that sort of thing and you reapproach some of the problems and you're not being swept up with all the anger and sadness and desperation and you're not reacting to those, but you're examining them, you're talking about them, that is a huge contrast and can potentially allow people to talk about their problems a bit better. 30 days can also, now, like I said, it's not always the solution. Even if you were reading out there, if you're seeing other videos out there, it's always needed. So some examples when 30 days might not be necessary. If you were able to calm things down, if you were able to present a large contrast in behavior and find some confidence and acceptance without that big gap of time, I think that's actually preferable. I often try to teach these skills, these kind of skills in my programs when I meet with clients and some of the videos that I put out there. I do think that oftentimes they're taking 30 days apart can sometimes be damaging, especially when you and your partner When your partner might be unsure of how they feel about the relationship, if they still want a fair amount of contact, or if you have children together or other required responsibilities. So basically, you know, the principle number one or step number one, there does need to be a reset, a point where the two of you can calm down and not be so reactive to your emotions. If you can manage that in other ways, I tend to like those other ways first. But like I said, there are many people out there who suggest 30 days of no contact to facilitate a reset like this. The 30 days aren't the important thing, it's the reset that's important. Step number one. Step number two, I think that even before you can then start, quote unquote, fixing the relationship, you have to establish comfort or trust with each other. And if you don't have those things, it becomes very difficult to work on the relationship. And I can almost guarantee you, if your spouse is starting to leave you, has started that process, is thinking about it, there are going to be problems with trust. Perhaps they don't feel that they can open up to you and share how they feel. Perhaps they don't trust in any sort of promised changes that you've been making or that you promised to make. Perhaps they don't trust that they will be respected or heard or valued. They feel that they're going to be hurt. Whatever it is, your relationship has come to a point where they feel so uncomfortable that they want to leave. And if you don't address that, you're going to have an awful hard time of fixing anything in the relationship. This is why begging and pleading and similar behaviors don't work. These behaviors focus on what you need from them. And this is just going to ramp up that discomfort. It's going to invalidate a lot of their feelings and concerns. If you are reacting with desperation and if you're begging and pleading, this is why step number one is the reset first, and then we have building up comfort and trust. Your goal after the reset is to make your partner feel safe, as though they can trust you, that they can be open with you. So I think we need to define what trust is about. I think in my mind, trust is all about predictability. Can I anticipate outcomes? Do I feel safe with those outcomes? Can I handle those outcomes? Do I have some measure of control over those outcomes? I think trust is also about being able to let go of some responsibility to others. As in, you can trust another person that they can handle some of your worries. It's still about some amount of predictability. It's about being able to know that if I leave these responsibilities in someone else's hand, I know that there's going to be a positive outcome here. And this is what trust is about. When we have this trust, when we can say, okay, I know that my partner, that my husband or wife will listen to me if I actually talk with them. I know that they will value my opinion, that they will follow through on some of the things that I request. This, in and of itself, it provides a sense of safety. I know what will happen, and I have some control over it, and it breeds comfort in the relationship. And this is really where you need to kind of establish this healthy foundation here before you can really fix the marriage. If they are continually worried about what's going to happen, what you are going to do, if they feel that they can't, if they're not going to feel heard and respected and valued their opinion, they can't trust you. And so they will back off, and doing a reset won't really mean anything. And this is why you start to see resistance as you're making changes. I'm sure many of you out there are saying, well, I've made changes, why won't my spouse believe me? It's this trust hasn't been built up. So while building trust is a deep subject just by itself, a few things, and I'm gonna point this out. This is not the entire solution for building trust, because I just don't have enough time to explain this deep subject. And I do have a lot of other videos, a lot of other material specifically on trust. But a few things generally lead towards more trust. If you can be open, openness helps with trust. And I think specifically, if you can be open about your own mistakes and examine them, say, hey, look, I made a mistake here. This is, and I'm owning up to it. Or if you can be open about how you feel. This means discussing how you are feeling without reacting to how you feel. That's, remember, we're trying to reset that and not react to emotions. But if you can be open about it, these things help. For instance, if I go to my wife and my tone is conveying anger and upsetness, if I say, why did you, I'm just trying to think, something small. Why did you leave the door open back there? I had to go all the way back to go take care of something that you should have taken care of. You know, like, I'm sorry, I don't have a whole lot of huge fights recently with my wife to draw from. But like, if I, you can hear the tone. If I go there with that kind of tone, it's a very different thing than saying, going to my wife and saying, hey, I'm a little bit upset right now. I'm just going to point out that I had to walk back and take care of some of the, and close your door when you to the car when you should have closed it. I had to turn around. I'm just want to let you know that that bothered me a little bit. It's fine. I just want to let you know. Those are very different sort of reactions and responses to an emotion. And as long as you can then take that and move it in a productive direction, you can, that sort of openness can build trust, because once again, there's some amount of predictability. There's some amount of safety in these sort of scenarios where you can discuss emotions without reacting to the emotions. It just does. it helps to build trust. It's because one of the things that it also does here is it demonstrates an ability to be open about how you feel. It opens up an ability for more feedback within a relationship, which then further provides a better sense of control. These are the themes here that we keep touching on. It's the control, the predictability, the safety. Openness provides that. If you have consistency, as in what you say you're going to do, you actually follow through on, and you're consistent with those sort of ideas. If you are responsible for something with the children or something with the household or something with work, and you are consistent with that, well, here we add more onto that predictability and that safety, and I'm able to let go of some responsibilities because I know that there will be positive outcomes when you hold on to that. That builds trust. I was talking about the openness and I started talking about feedback, but I'm going to even make that a separate thing that builds trust, is effective feedback. Meaning that you and your partner, your spouse, are able to effectively discuss problems and have those addressed. Once again, this in and of itself is a deep subject. I have multiple videos and trainings on feedback and communication. But if you can actually work on that yourself and make that a consistent thing, either giving received back effectively or receiving feedback effectively, it builds trust. I kept touching on another point, control. If you can pull out your partner's opinions and be respectful of those opinions, allow them to have some control over what's going on, this builds trust. These are all things that help get you to that point where things can feel a bit more safe and secure. where your partner isn't going to feel so uncomfortable about being around you, which is the second step. This is all what the second step is about, is we're trying to eliminate a lot of that tension, that discomfort. First, we reset things so that it could get to this point, that things could calm down. But now we need to actually actively work on it being okay to be around each other. And you can't skip these steps. You can't move past it, because if you're over here working on romance, on trying to be friends before you're even comfortable around each other, it's just gonna, you're gonna fall flat on your face, and it's just not gonna work. Which brings us to our third step of friendliness, building up friendship. So if you're wanting to work on things, I just want to really emphasize once again, don't skip steps. You need to be able to reset things. You need to build up comfort. You need to build up friendliness before you can work on a romantic relationship or some commitment to the relationship. But, and so when your partner trusts you, when they're comfortable around you, it is so, so much easier to build up pleasant interactions and friendliness. We even saw this in our client win of the week. This woman has demonstrated many changes with consistency. And because of this, you know, she's built up some amount of trust, allowing her to build up friendly interactions to the point where her husband is inviting her out to go do things, wants to be around her. And so when you have these things, like I said, it's easier to build up the friendship. So what builds up friendship then? Friendliness. I would say that support, being a supportive person, can absolutely build up friendliness. And what this means is there needs to be, you know, like when I say be supportive, you know, a supportive person is an understanding person, someone who can have empathy, who can kind of read what's needed. Sometimes, you know, some people are really good at have an intuitive skill to read this. Some people need a little bit more communication. But, you know, having that understanding is really key to being supportive. A supportive person is giving. They are generous with their time or their resources. They're also flexible. There's some flexibility. You know, if I go and try to support my wife in certain ways, and that's not what she needs, I need to be able to be a little bit flexible, and I need to be able to adjust so that she feels like I'm listening to her, and that she, what matters to her matters to me. I think a lot of what provides and builds up friendliness is also a lot, I mentioned this principle in a lot of different places, but validation. I even talked about some of the ideas in there earlier today. Being able to be heard, understood, and valued are all key concepts to validation. Now, some of you might hear the word validation as meaning you need to give in to what your partner wants, and that's not at all what this is about. I might not actually agree or give in to what my wife wants, but she still needs validation from me, even if we disagree. It means that I'm listening to her, that she feels that I've actively considered what she needs, that I might make some attempts at some compromise. But it, you know, like if I had to just break it down into one thing, it's about does their opinion feel valued? And if you have that, then you're much better able to build up friendliness. But I also think that a big thing that's missing in scenarios where you have a partner exiting a marriage is what tends to exit out, as well as a sense of lightness and playfulness. Are your interactions actually enjoyable? Recalling a bit of advice from a book called Fighting for Your Marriage. It has multiple authors. Actually, I can remember. It's Markman, Stanley, and Bloomberg. I think. Don't quote me on that one, but I remember one of the bits of advice in that book that really stuck out to me was this idea of protecting your relationship from business or basically unpleasantness. Now, this bit of advice was more for like couples who really wanted to protect their relationship, wanted to be together. And it was a suggestion for, you know, how to handle dates, like don't talk about business or kids on dates. But I think it applies as you are trying to repair a relationship as well, and as you're trying to reintroduce friendliness back into your relationship. If you are constantly approaching your partner and the tone is negative and it's dramatic and it's heavy and we're solving problems, and that's the bulk of how you are interacting, that's a situation where most people will run away from that. They're going to find reasons to avoid being with you. And so you need to ask yourself, okay, are there opportunities for us to be a little bit playful, for there to be a little bit of some lightness and some joking and some enjoyment? I think, you know, there's obviously appropriate times for it, but I think even in many difficult situations, adding a little bit of lightness or playfulness can be really relieving. It provides like a sharp contrast against like an upsetting background, and can sometimes wake people out of like a little bit of a funk. Now, like I said, I'm not going to pretend that my suggestions today are an exhaustive list by any means. But I do think that those three steps or principles, you need to ask yourself, have you gone through these things? Have you gone through a period where you can reset the emotions, where you're not constantly reacting to these negative states? If you can manage that without some, you know, a large amount of distance, as in like weeks without talking to them, by all means, do that. But if you are feeling stuck there, you might need to consider a period of no contact. Typically, when I'm working with my clients, I support them in communicating that period so that it goes as smoothly as possible. But yeah, you need an opportunity to reset the situation. You need a time where you are building up comfort and trust and safety within the relationship. You need a period where you are building up friendliness. And this is all before you are working on the marriage. And I'm saying that because it can often be relieving to not have to worry about these grander goals, these bigger goals, and to just focus on what's in front of you right now and making this bit feel a little bit better. So I hope that's helpful. You know, and the marriage mythbuster that I wanted to discuss today relates to this idea, and this is not, the myth is there is a specific timeline to working out problems. And I'm wording it like that on purpose. This is absolutely a myth. You've heard Heather, if you've been listening to the podcast. She talks about how she struggled a little bit as her husband Ben wanted a little bit of time before discussing problems, whereas Heather wanted to tackle them right away. On the other end of the spectrum, we can, we can get to this point where you say, let's not deal with it now, let's put it off, and it never happens. But And I think that's where a lot of worry comes from, where we get people who are saying, I need to take care of this now. Perhaps that sense is coming from the fact that maybe your husband or wife has filed divorce papers. Maybe it's because they've moved out. You say, I need to take care of this right now. Maybe it's because you yourself are feeling uncomfortable sitting on this for very long. And I think that's where a lot of this comes from, where this idea that there's a certain timeline to fix problems come from is, do you feel emotionally okay with where you are at right now? And I want you to ask yourself, are you okay with where you are at right now? Because if you are not, I can guarantee you that it comes out in your interactions with your spouse, and it's going to affect your repair attempts negatively. A lot of my clients who come to me, they come with a sense of desperation that things need to be fixed right now, that if it's not fixed within a few weeks or a month or two, that it's likely to never be fixed. And these are, once again, just reactions to the sense of unease, I feel like, in the most part. Maybe there is a fair amount of evidence or expression from your partner that says, I'm done, things are never going to change. Maybe that's where the desperation comes from. But that's just it. It's just a sense of desperation. Our client one of the week even was saying that at one point her husband was saying, this is never going to change. You are never going to change. I'm never going to feel differently. And yet she is in a very different place than where she was when she said this all started around Memorial Day weekend. Very, very different place. Now, having worked with this woman, I can tell you that one of the big things that has helped is that she has been able to find some acceptance, and she's not reacting so much to her emotions. And it allows her to not be worried so much about the timeline of repair. I could give you example after example after example after example of very similar situations. So what I'm getting at here is, let go of a sense of a timeline. I could talk to you about the clients that I've seen that even after the divorce has been finalized, where there's been progress and repair. But, you know, like I said, many examples, but the important piece is asking yourself, are you okay with it taking a little bit more time than you expected? And if you're not, you need to work on that. That's all that a sense of a timeline is about. It's not being okay with where you're at. Anyways, I hope this is helpful. Just when I'm here by myself, the podcasts tend to run a little bit shorter. There's not as much opportunity to bounce ideas off of other people. But if you are struggling with this, if you're struggling with, you know, some of these first steps, either the resetting the situation and calming things down, or building up trust and comfort, if you're struggling with building up friendliness, let us know in the comments. We like to hear from you. I very much pay attention to these, and it helps me to plan out new content, new podcasts, because I do like to respond to what all of you are needing. So let us know. I do check those out on a regular basis. Thank you all for listening, and hopefully we'll have Heather or my wife Jen with me next week. But see you all then.
Thanks for listening to The Thriving Marriage, your A to Z blueprint for not just surviving marriage, but thriving. Until next time, my friends, thrive on.